Now, you know, the idea is that you're going to be able to run Kubernetes, and we're committed to help you do that with consistency across all of these different environments. And today, you know, we're addressing that with VMware PKS. But if we were really serious about Kubernetes, you know, like
and
really serious, Joe, what would we do?
How about build it into vSphere?
Build it into vSphere? What do you think? And that's exactly what we are doing. Today, I'm excited to announce Project Pacific, an effort to embed Kubernetes directly into vSphere. Project Pacific unites vSphere and Kubernetes. It unites developers and operators. Project Pacific establishes vSphere as the platform for modern applications. vSphere, the most trusted platform today, the most trusted platform tomorrow.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 129. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, well, first and foremost, you look a little wet today, buddy.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm feeling a little wet, but we're cleaning up. We will rebuild. I will flip up the patio furniture and go see if there's a unblocked road to get me to get some breakfast. So
yeah. You guys got a lot of rain this week. So I am back from Austin. What a great week. I went to Pure Accelerate and lots of energy there. They made a lot of great announcements there. I don't know if you saw. They've got like support for storage class memory. They even went the other way. They're doing quad level cells, like the 4-bit for the cheaper, deeper.
This is something that I think we'd heard rumors of Facebook and others doing for a while. Is give us your low quality-est memory. You know, it's to really try to go after that nearline storage market. Go after those big slow drives with just well optimized flash. It's an interesting play.
Oh yeah, for sure. Then they also announced that Cloud Block Store is now GA, and so for Pure customers that are used to being on premises now have this ability to run Purity in the cloud. Really, really expands the mobility story there. But it all, you know, works with all the, you know, their APIs, but also works with virtual volumes. So again, extending the data mobility story of virtual volumes on Pure, which is pretty cool. I also did a ton of podcast interviews there, John. Got to talk to a bunch of folks, and we're going to share those on a future episode. And then I finished a trip by swinging by our VMware office there. Met with a friend of mine there, Orlando Gutierrez. He's a business development manager there. And he's got a great team of new hires from VMware that are basically just getting started. So I got to chat with them and a really cool group. I even grabbed a few interviews there that I'll share on a future episode. So great trip.
Yeah. And for anyone looking to join the inside team there in Austin, VMware.jobs. Just remember to contact Pete so he can get the referral. So
good call. Maybe I'll put that on the show notes.
It's Pete's retirement plan is referrals off of the podcast.
That's hilarious. Well, John, tag, you're it, man. So my trip to Austin is done, and you're headed out to Spice World.
Yeah, I'll be at Spice World. I'll be talking about what's new with vSAN and VxRail. I'll be presenting with Ivan from Dell, and I'll be hanging out there those days at the conference. I'll also be in town if anyone's up for coffee or something. I'll be around or barbecue. Lots of barbecue always in Austin. And, you know, Pete, I think Austin is the new Vegas.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I like Austin a lot more than I like Vegas, so I'll agree with you there. And I might have to bow to the champions of barbecue, Texas, because I had some pretty stellar barbecue this past week. I'm not going to lie.
You know, I was actually in the Carolinas last weekend, and I had some great pulled pork. You know, I'll give respect. I don't think anyone in Texas knows how to cook a bird properly. So yeah, the chicken is great there, but welcome to the home of the brisket.
Oh, for sure. All right. Well, John, you know, big conversation at VMworld this year. So many of the announcements and so much of the conversation was around Tanzu and Kubernetes. I mean, we talked to
Kubernetes. Sorry, I'm starting to go full bomber there.
I said we don't go full bomber, but anyway, so I knew right away we definitely wanted to get this gentleman on to help us understand a little bit more about Project Pacific. And so joining us for the second time on the Virtually Speaking Podcast is Mr. Kit Colbert. Kit, welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I was looking back, and the last time you came on was a while ago. It was episode 31, and we were talking about vSphere integrated containers.
That's hilarious. And it's funny, like a lot of the work we did there, a lot of those concepts we're bringing forward, some of our announcements, like around Project Pacific.
Yeah, that's what I kind of got from that as well. I mean, it seemed like when vSphere integrated containers first came out, it seemed like, oh, this is the first dip in the, dipping your toe in the water of, combining these two key areas. And clearly VMware has been very focused on Kubernetes from a long time ago, as evidenced in that episode. But so why don't we start with where we are now? Like, you guys just announced this Project Pacific, which is a tech preview, combining some of the Kubernetes workloads inside of vSphere. So give us the why, the very high level, like, why would we even care about this?
Yeah, well, we're constantly looking at vSphere and looking at how do we evolve it? How do we ensure it can be the best platform for running any sort of application, both existing as well as modern ones? And as we started looking at that, one of the things that we realized was that for modern workloads, Kubernetes really is becoming the standard. It's the standard way that developers interact with their applications, and there's a growing ecosystem that's being built around it. Now, the really cool thing about Kubernetes is that while traditionally it's been viewed as a container orchestrator, it actually has a much more generalized architecture and can be used for a lot more. And so what we're actually doing with Project Pacific is re-architecting vSphere to use Kubernetes, but moreover, it's actually leveraging Kubernetes as an infrastructure interface. So the way you interact with vSphere today is based on these VM-based APIs. And where we're going in the future is really, how do we take Kubernetes and use that to be the primary workload management interface for vSphere? And to do that for all of a company's workloads, not just the new ones, but the existing ones. And so you have one way of managing and running them all.
So looking at this and looking at some of the diagrams that have been shown for this, from that using Kubernetes as a general cluster management, how are some of the existing, capabilities that vCenter has mapped to the Kubernetes world? How would I map my skill set of features? I hear DRS was a cool feature back in the day. And things
like that. People still use it today. Can you believe it? Okay, well, in order to really understand this, let's take one level down and jump into some of the technical specifics. Sure. So what we're doing is there's actually two functions that we're using Kubernetes for in this environment. One of which, as I said, is an infrastructure interface. The other is to create Kubernetes clusters. So in the first one, what we're doing is actually evolving vSphere such that each ESX cluster is now also a Kubernetes cluster. And so this is really interesting, right? You now have a set of ESX hosts, each of which has Hosty on it, so host daemon that connects up to vCenter.
Yeah.
You also will now have a kubelet running on each ESX host. We call that a spherelet in our terminology. And so within that cluster, you'll have a Kubernetes master. And so now you have these two different interfaces into that ESX cluster. There is the traditional vCenter interface, and there's the Kubernetes interface. But both of them are talking down to that same physical cluster. And now you can imagine, it's not going to create problems because, kind of a split brain situation.
Hmm. You've got one that's a declarative management framework and then vCenter, which is, not. So
yeah, it's imperative. That's okay, because what we're doing is actually uniting them in the right ways. So if a user talks to Kubernetes and says, hey, I want to provision this workload, one of the things Kubernetes needs to do is figure out which ESX host to run that workload on. And so what it can do is talk to vCenter and ask DRS, hey, which host should I run this workload on? So all the scheduling, all the admission control, all that stuff still goes through the normal process. It can just be initiated now via Kubernetes. But everything still works because you have a single cluster and DRS and vCenter are still doing admission control and all that stuff. So you can have workloads that are created by vCenter or created by Kubernetes running side by side within that single cluster. So what does that mean? Well, what it means is that all the existing tools, technologies, scripts, training that our customers have invested around vSphere still work, but now kind of light up because they can now get access to and see some of these newer Kubernetes workloads as well. The underlying runtime on ESX is still a VM-based runtime. We do some optimizations for pods, but which I can talk about in a minute. But the point here is that all these things kind of just look like VMs in the traditional vSphere APIs. So all these tools will naturally just see these different Kubernetes objects now and can act on them like they do for regular VMs. Simultaneously, on the Kubernetes side, we're evolving Kubernetes now to support VMs. So Kubernetes is no longer just about containers and pods. You can actually run an entire normal VM inside of Kubernetes using that declarative specification that you just mentioned, John. So it's two different sides, but really one thing underneath the covers.
Well, and that was really exciting, seeing the idea of extending the namespace from, you know, containers to VMs. But I guess it's kind of logical because we already had function as a service and some other things getting put in there. So
yeah, well, I think what this does is, well, there's a couple of things it does. It makes it easier for developers to work at their own speed while at the same time enabling IT operations to maintain the sort of control they want. So one of the cool things that we're doing here is that that Kubernetes cluster, the ESX cluster, can be divided up into what are called namespaces. Namespaces are a Kubernetes concept, essentially kind of like a lightweight form of multi-tenancy within a Kubernetes cluster. In any case, the idea is that IT operations team can create a namespace and give it a certain amount of resources and then give access to that namespace to a developer or a development team. That team can then go off and do what they want. And whether it's VMs or pods or functions or even entire other Kubernetes clusters, whatever they want to provision, they can use that interface into vSphere, that Kubernetes interface, to do all that.
And so the namespace, you can do things from a vSphere perspective to that namespace, like apply policies and things like that and manage it at the namespace level?
Yeah, so that's one of the really other cool things. You know, Project Pacific is a ton of new capabilities. So it's kind of tough to like wrap your arms around it because there's so much going on here. But that is another one of these other areas that we did put a lot of focus into. This notion of how do we help customers to manage at scale? Yeah. Just looking at the number of containers that are going to be out there, way more.
Yeah, that could get dangerous. I mean, you could scale pretty big, you know, with Kubernetes. That would make a virtual administrator kind of nervous.
Exactly. Not just the raw number, but also the amount that they're changing. Containers are constantly getting created. They're going away. Now that developers can have this sort of self-service access into vSphere, you know, you got to be able to really up the scalability of how you manage that environment. And so the idea is that rather than managing on a per VM or per pod or whatever basis, you can manage at the basis of a namespace. And so that namespace will, to your point, it's a first-class object inside of vSphere. You can see it in the vSphere client. You can see all the pods and everything running inside of it.
Nice.
And then you can do actions on it. Things like, you know, do you want to vMotion this entire thing somewhere or do a snapshot to it or back it up or what have you.
And you can do that, obviously, from inside of vSphere, but the tools that the Kubernetes administrator would use to manage it, they're not having to jump into vSphere, right? They're actually...
Not at all. So the funny thing about this with Project Pacific is if you look at it from an IT operations point of view, this thing looks and feels like vSphere, like they are always known and used. From a developer point of view, this thing looks and feels like Kubernetes. Like they don't even necessarily know it's vSphere behind the scenes. You know what I mean? It's just a Kubernetes API. Obviously, this Kubernetes API has been extended because we can now create VMs inside of it. So that's kind of cool. But broadly speaking, the Kubernetes ecosystem tooling just works against this environment.
Well, and this kind of makes sense that this audience dependent view, because if I think about it, if I'm presenting or talking about this and I kick off a demo at VMworld and I start with, hey, look at all this, you know, look at all these YAML files, look at all this Kubernetes side developer side stuff. There's a lot of VMware admins who are going to, there's some who know, but there's also going to a lot who will glaze over. Inversely, if I go to KubeCon and I'm like, hey, look, let's talk about Pacific and here's vCenter and let's spend 30 minutes in vCenter and I'm going to have a lot of people glaze up. So meeting people where they are from their expectations and where they're comfortable from management, that's really powerful.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely good points, and you're absolutely right. We are trying to meet people where they are. I will say, though, one thing that we are seeing is some overlap between these two communities already, right? Even putting Project Pacific aside for just a second, even without that, you know, if you look at KubeCon, there are a lot of people there that are running vSphere and are running these Kubernetes clusters on top of vSphere, even some VI admins, you know, and at VMworld, a lot of the sessions around Kubernetes were very popular. I think people kind of realize, hey, I need to start learning about this. And so, you know, one of the things that Pacific enables is it enables all of our, you know, 500,000 customers running vSphere to kind of get an easy path into Kubernetes, right? How do you kind of dip your toe in the water, get a feel for what this thing is, but do so in an environment that you're familiar with and the tools that you know. And so that's the other really powerful thing, is helping to move all these customers forward to embrace Kubernetes.
So if you're looking to learn Kubernetes, I heard something about an academy that we're launching.
Yeah. So it's something that we just announced a couple of weeks ago now. I can't remember exactly when. But basically, the idea is that, you know, VMware loves Kubernetes, and we believe Kubernetes is the future from an infrastructure abstraction. We think it's a really, really powerful piece of software. And so because of that, we want to help everybody, not just VMware customers, but anyone, learn more about Kubernetes, get more into the details of it. And so this Kubernetes Academy that we announced is not a vendor-specific academy. It's just a general open source upstream Kubernetes and how do you get that knowledge. And so there's a bunch of videos, classes, et cetera, there that people can take to really get, you know, that basic knowledge of Kubernetes and then to go deep in various areas as well. So it's, again, another way that we at VMware really want to contribute back to the Kubernetes community.
Oh, yeah. And to your point, John and I did a session, a podcast session actually last week on the changing IT landscape. And one of the questions we asked a bunch of attendees before the session was, what are you here to learn this week? And the overwhelming response was Kubernetes. I mean, everybody was like, there were a couple of people that said, I want to learn a little bit about VR ops or whatever. But I mean, I would say probably 90% of the folks that answered that question said Kubernetes. So there's definitely an awareness of the direction that IT is going, and there's certainly a focus on our customer base that I see, at least. So that, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yep. No, I mean, I think people, something that we've been talking about at VMware for a while now, right? Like, I think it was, when was it? Was it back in 2014 that we first, included in the VMworld keynote some discussion around Docker and containers and kind of, VMs plus containers better together. That was kind of the narrative we had. We still have, right? It's evolved, obviously, but it's still the basic idea. And so that, if you look at the wider industry in general, I think people are starting to see, this stuff is becoming mainstream. And, it's something that people want to learn more about now. One of the things that we think a lot about within my team is all of these vSphere VI admins, right? Folks that have invested many years of their life into this product, into the tooling around it, getting training, becoming experts in it. And we think a lot about how do we help these folks move forward? How do we help them evolve their career? It's one of those interesting transformations that's happened, right? You take a lot of these folks who were originally Windows Server admins, and they went over and now they became, VI admins, just dealing with vSphere. And now we went and say, we can build in storage there too with vSAN. So, okay, now they're kind of becoming storage admins. And then with NSX and network virtualization, now they're kind of doing some network stuff. And now we want them to be Kubernetes people as well. So, it's interesting. And it's like, how do you balance all that? So, they don't need to be experts in the field of storage or networking or even Kubernetes, but how do we get them some base level of knowledge so that they're able to manage these environments? And what can we do to help automate that or enable them to better manage at scale? So, so that's definitely something we think a lot about. And again, we think Pacific is a great way for a lot of these folks to kind of dip their toes in the water with Kubernetes, get a feel for it, but again, from a familiar environment.
One question I had here, this slightly changing topics. The claim that we can exceed bare metal performance with CRM.
That was bold.
Yeah, no, that one caught a lot of people off guard. And we kind of debated it. Do we put it in the keynote? Do we not? But, I think it was useful. So I'll say a couple of things. First of all, I don't think performance is that big of an issue. Most customers don't. Well, it's not a concern that they have.
We all have 96 cores and, half a terabyte of RAM in our hosts. Resources are getting cheap.
And ESX is a very, very, scales very well. ESX and virtualization are one of the only use cases for having 100 cores in a single physical system, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to imagine the Oracle licensing of 100 cores. So it's the only thing that normally scales vertically in that direction is databases, and the cost of doing so is...
Yep. SAP HANA, that can use that. But in any case, but getting back to the performance thing. So in the keynote, we announced two numbers, one of which... The context of it was, if you run a pod within the supervisor cluster, then we have this optimized runtime that we use. So we call that CRX. And the idea there is that it is a VM, but it's a heavily modified and specialized, very lightweight VM. Just for running pods. And when we look at that, compared to a traditional VM running on vSphere, we found that we were about 30% faster for a compute heavy workload, spec JBB. And what we also found, which was kind of surprising, but not too surprising, was that we were about, what are the final numbers, 8 to 10% faster than bare metal. So you're like, okay, how is this pod running inside of a VM faster than a pod running on bare metal? And I think the challenge here is how people conceptualize the comparison. People tend to think about bare metal as if it's like there's nothing. There's like no software. It's just, raw hardware, right?
Just raw power.
But that's obviously not the case. Very concretely, what we're comparing is a VM running on top of Linux. A container or pod running on top of Linux in a VM on vSphere on hardware, right? Compared to a pod application running inside of a pod on Linux on bare metal. So there is still something there. It's Linux. So the question then becomes, for this workload, who is better at doing scheduling, ESX or Linux? And what we found is that because of the fact that ESX has driven massive scale in terms of the number of cores on a physical processor, that we've actually become very good at doing scheduling across all those cores. Now, if you're familiar with Intel architecture, for all these cores, they have this non-uniform memory layout, which means that for certain sets of memory, you get very fast access to it from the processor you're running on. But for other sets of memory, it's a remote access, and that's a much slower read or write operation. So what we've done is our scheduler takes a lot of time and effort and does a lot of, you know, thinking around how can it ensure that the application and the physical cores that the application is scheduled on are always within the NUMA node of its memory so that it can get very low latency accesses to its memory.
Sure.
And that's kind of how we optimize our scheduler. Now, Linux, on the other hand, is a different strategy. Their strategy is to try and maximize utilization across processor cores, irrespective of where the memory is in comparison to that core. So what we found when we looked at the data was that ESX, when we were doing it, we had almost no remote NUMA node accesses, very, very low, basically zero, right? Which meant that this workload was getting very fast access to its memory, and that thus it could do more stuff because it wasn't waiting. Whereas what we saw with Linux, we saw a tremendous number of remote NUMA node accesses. And the problem there is that, you know, and from a CPU instruction pipeline point of view, you know, that pipeline is stalled while that memory read or write is occurring because, you know, you can't do anything until it comes back. And so you're missing a lot of cycles there. And so what we found was that, it's just kind of this inefficient scheduling, which led to a lot of wasted cycles, which meant the process couldn't do as much when running on Linux bare metal as it could when running in an ESX VM. And so this goes to the show, the strength of ESX, right? It's a really, really awesome, very mature, you know, thought through product. And that this whole notion of virtualization being overhead hasn't been true for many years. Like we've known and we've seen for like things like Spark workloads, about 5% faster than bare metal in many cases there as well. So again, it's kind of head turning for people because they're like, whoa, it forces them to rethink their mental model. At the same time, it's also a little bit of a red herring because again, most customers don't care about performance, right? That's not their main issue. The main value of using virtualization versus bare metal is all the operational capabilities around it, of right? Course, all the tooling and all security, et cetera.
Yeah. As long as you're not slowing things down, I mean, 8%, if that's your margin for error of running out of performance, you probably underbought. But that I do like, though, the deep thought of that on memory placement, because it reminds me of one of the sessions they were talking about some future concepts of external memory, some of that Gen Z architecture. Yep. And as we evolve what servers are, this type of memory placement is going to get even smarter when we have to sort out internal versus external and PMEM versus regular DRAM and all this other stuff.
Yeah, you're right. And matter of fact, there's a tremendous amount of innovation happening in the hardware space right now. So you mentioned persistent memory. That's a really interesting one. You know, traditionally, we've had this trade-off that you can have really fast memory access, but that memory is not persistent, right? You lose it when you reboot or lose power. On the other hand, you know, you lose many orders of magnitude in terms of latency when you access memory that is persistent. But now with this new persistent memory thing, you actually get kind of the best of both worlds where it's like very, very fast. I mean, still maybe, okay, an order of magnitude slower than main DRAM, but now it's persistent. And what we've seen is that if you can re-architect applications correctly, you can get like significant, like, you know, 2x performance increase for some of these databases. Simultaneously, we're seeing with the advent of faster and faster Ethernet getting up to like, you know, 100G Ethernet. I mean, that's insane. And like, you can do a lot there now where like Ethernet and the network's no longer like the slowest part. Like the latency is so low, basically like having a local machine there. So now you get this notion of composable hardware where you can take individual components, GPUs or NICs from different hosts and build
them. The Bitnami, external GPU and all that stuff. So no,
so we're actually attacking it at multiple levels. Yeah. So Bitnami is interesting because what it's doing is virtualizing at the API layer, at the CUDA layer. Right? That's where we interpose.
There's a guest agent that intercepts the CUDA call, right?
It's all done at user level. There's no hardware virtualization here. What they do is when you run the FlexDirect product, the Bitnami product, essentially what it does is injects its own libraries into whatever app that the customer wants to run, Python or TensorFlow or whatever it is. And that way, whenever, you know, that, let's say TensorFlow or Python does an API call to say, hey, I want to call this into the CUDA library, BitFusion intercepts that call and forwards that call over to a server where the GPU is actually running. So again, it's a higher level of abstraction versus what we're doing traditionally done as more of a hardware level virtualization.
So as we're moving up the stack with Bitnami, it would definitely be easy to see how a catalog or a marketplace could be opened up for apps to be distributed by whether it's VMware or even partners that want to run their apps in like a known good Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. What is your perspective on vSphere, infrastructure as a service becoming possibly platform as a service?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a lot of appetite for that, right? And I think a lot of opportunity now. One of the really cool things about Pacific is it enables a lot of these things to happen even more seamlessly. So there's a concept within Kubernetes called a Kubernetes operator. And an operator is essentially, the way to think about it is a way of, okay, you have software, which is kind of static, but like, how do you, upgrade it? How do you deal with failures of some sort, if a node goes down, how do you want to repair that? So an operator can kind of encode that sort of operational knowledge so that the service can essentially run itself and be operated on. So it's not just day one stuff, but some day two activities there as well. So this is all out there in the Kubernetes community. And there's a lot of vendors that have implemented Kubernetes operators for their customers to use. And now that we have Pacific, all those operators people have built can work on top of Pacific as well. So there's to your point, there's a really interesting then integration between what we're doing with Bitnami and all these folks in the Kubernetes operator ecosystem and bringing those two things together. So I think we're just at the tip of the thing I've been telling to a lot of folks is that we're just at the tip of the iceberg here. Like we've got the basic Project Pacific functionality out there. But there's so many things we can do on top of that. It's really pretty exciting.
Yeah. Another curiosity I had was, is there any consideration of using this on edge? Maybe even on like running it on ARM, for example. Does that make sense to run this on edge?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're actively looking at all those things. So we announced last year at VMworld the tech preview of ESX on ARM. I actually manage that team now, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
They got under me. So yeah, we're looking at a lot of different use cases there. I mean, edge is certainly one. There's a number of different ARM use cases. The other big one, if we're talking about hardware innovation, is the advent of what are called smart NICs. Essentially, the top of the line NICs from whether it's Broadcom, Intel, Mellanox, they almost all of them have actually ARM processors, like a full SoC ARM chip on the NIC. And we actually demoed this at VMworld just a couple of weeks ago, where you had an ESX server with like three or four SmartNICs in it. And each of those SmartNICs on that ARM chip, we actually ran another copy of ESX. So you had an ESX cluster, a single host ESX cluster with no nested virtualization. That's interesting. So what can you do with that? Well, there's all sorts of interesting things you can do. So whether it's Edge or SmartNICs or whatever, we're definitely actively looking at the ARM ecosystem. But the cool thing again is that once we have that working, all the stuff we're doing on top of vSphere comes together, all the Kubernetes stuff, all the Bitnami integration. Right. So again, there's a lot of activity happening at all different levels of the stack. But the great part about it is all that activity is highly complementary. Right. As we do one thing here, it kind of benefits the whole ecosystem.
It looks like we're definitely pivoting, if I can use that pun, to being a full stack company and not just an infrastructure provider.
Yeah. I mean, I think of us, we are definitely getting more application centric. I still think of us as being infrastructure focused, though. I think what's changing is the definition of infrastructure. So if you look at it, what is Kubernetes? Kubernetes, if you look at it before Kubernetes was a thing, the web sphere, web logic, et cetera, that's kind of what Kubernetes does, is some of that stuff. And those things were squarely in the middleware category before, right? But now Kubernetes, people kind of look at that, that's more infrastructure now all of a sudden. And so I think what shifted is actually the standardization of it. Kubernetes is an open standard. And as I said, we believe it's kind of the right infrastructure abstraction layer, infrastructure interface. And so as these things get standardized, as Linux containers become standardized, we can bring that down into our infrastructure layer. And so so that's what I see happening. You look at Bitfusion, it's the same idea there, right? If there were 100 different protocols for managing a GPU or interacting with a GPU, they couldn't virtualize all those. That'd be insane, right? But since there's really just a main one, CUDA, and maybe OpenCL to some degree, that's much easier, right? And so I think as we find those additional standards, as that sort of line that demarcates infrastructure from non-infrastructure moves up the stack, that's a huge opportunity for VMware and allows us to do even more. And so a lot of the announcements we made, a lot of the acquisitions we made, in my view, are based on the fact that infrastructure line is rising up the stack, allowing us to do a lot more.
Yeah, kid, I saw your session at VMworld, the transforming vSphere into the application platform of the future. And for those that for those of you that missed it, it's HBI4937BU, and I'll be putting that on the show notes of the page. But great session, and you actually opened it up with the comment that there will be more apps deployed in the next 5 years than in the last 40 years. So it tells me that there's a major consideration here in terms of handling all these new applications. It seems like this is the direction that VMware is solidly focused.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of that thing is like the rate of change is increasing, but also the definition of what an application is evolving as well. And so, you know, traditionally an app was this kind of big thing, and now an app is really, it could be a container or a function or a VM. You know, it's like could be many different things. And so, as we talked about, we're doing a lot in Pacific to handle that, and a lot of our management products are evolving to handle that sort of complexity. Really, it's a question of like, how can we automate more and more, allowing the admins to really up-level what they're doing, right? You can't be in the minutia of it. And this is what we've been talking about, right? It's like this kind of evolution of, you know, at first it was just ESX, and each ESX had its own little MUI, right? The management user interface. And eventually people were like, hey, I've got like 50 ESX boxes in my data center, and I can't go to each single one and manage them. Like, that's completely insane. I need like a central way of doing that. So we said, great, let's go create vCenter for you. And so we did that. And now we're to the point with all these SDDCs where you kind of got SDDCs everywhere. And so it's like, how do we help manage these SDDCs at scale? How do we help manage all the apps at scale? So there is a lot of thinking that's going on there for sure, across the board.
Nice. Last question. What date will this be available? Tell us now. We want to get the scoop. Just kidding.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. Everyone's asking. Well, this is a tech preview, which means in technical VMware terms that you know, we're really just looking for feedback and trying to drive awareness on it, but obviously making no commitment to ever ship it, though given the excitement, one could presume we probably will, and perhaps somewhat soon. Well, only time will tell.
Yeah.
When we do get closer to the release, we can do an embargo podcast for the launch.
So. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Perfect.
Good stuff. Well, yeah, I think that's an excellent introduction into Project Pacific. Kit, thanks for joining us again. You're always welcome to come back on. And are you going to be at Barcelona doing the same presentations that you did at US?
Yeah. We'll be at Barcelona and probably talking even more about Pacific there as we kind of, you know, trickle out more and more information about it.
Sweet.
A lot more exciting stuff.
Great. Well, plenty of show links. I've got links to the demos, the blogs that you guys have been writing on your team, as well as your VMworld sessions. All of those will be on the show notes of this page. Kit, thanks for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me.
One last thing. For those of you attending the Boston VMUG UserCon next week, hope to see you there. I'll be doing a presentation at 4:15 on virtual volumes, and I'll also be doing some podcasting. So hit me up on Twitter, and maybe we can hook up and do some podcasting together. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Kit Culbert for sharing all his goodness on Project Pacific. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.